argument this morning is Frye against the Exelon Corporation Cash Balance Pension Plan. Mr. Sprong.
Judge Easterbrook. Judge Evans, Judge Sykes, good morning. My name is Doug Sprong. I represent Thomas Frye. ERISA requires defined benefit pension plans to set what the statute says is a normal retirement age. This is no mere throwaway provision. As the IRS explained in the preamble to its recent regulation on normal retirement age, the normal retirement age is important for applying what are known as the minimum benefit rules, also known as the backloading rules. It is critical to applying the minimum distribution rules. It is also critical in applying offset accruals after normal retirement age. Interestingly enough, an issue that you, Judge Easterbrook, addressed about 10 days ago in the Contilli opinion. So there are a variety of rules throughout the ERISA and the Internal Revenue Code that all hinge on normal retirement age. And the statute itself makes it very clear that normal retirement age must be an age. In fact, the only time the statute refers to a term of service as being someone's normal retirement age is when that individual has already reached age 65 and has not yet completed 5 years of service. 5 years of service is the minimum vesting cliff in ERISA. So that provision was enacted, according to legislative history, to encourage employers to hire individuals close to their 65th birthday so as to prevent that employee from immediately vesting.
Doesn't that give you a problem? The statute itself defines age as being employed 5 years.
Yeah, it does not give me any problem, Your Honor. It employs age only if you've reached age 65, not before. This plan is pulling a gimmick.
That's the problem. If you say the word age can refer only to a chronological age, it seems to me that that argument is embarrassed by the fact that the statute itself defines the word age to mean 5 years on the job. Under certain circumstances, you say, but there it is.
Well, but it's pretty obvious that those circumstances are not evident in this case. The statute is very clear that it has to be the later of 65 or 5 years of service. And so if that's the rule we're going to apply, then I have no problems in this case because this plan doesn't say 65 or the later of 65 or 5 years of service. This plan says 5 years of service. And they're very candid about why they do that. It is not because they think someone who starts at 18 is going to reach normal retirement age at 23. It is to get around this court's holding in Berger versus Xerox. It's to get around the Second Circuit's holding in Esden versus Bank Boston and the IRS's Notice 96-8. It is also to get around the backloading rules that I referenced earlier in the IRS's final regulations on normal retirement age. So it is not a good faith effort to comply with the statute. It is a brazen effort to get around the statute. And the type of effort drafting around the statute that this court has consistently condemned, including recently in Williams versus Roman Haas, where I believe Judge Evans, you were on that panel, but also in Berger versus Xerox.
That's the second time you've tried to make an ad hominem argument. It doesn't make any difference who writes the opinions or who is on the panel.
Yes, Your Honor.
Opinions of this court speak for the circuit.
Yes, Your Honor.
Ad hominem arguments will get you nowhere.
I meant no disrespect. I was simply referencing cases, and I apologize, Your Honor. It is customary in ERISA matters, and this was done in the Contilli case, to consult the IRS and Treasury. I'm not suggesting that the IRS and Treasury be directly consulted in this case because the issue is pretty straightforward. But if we look at the revenue rulings throughout the 70s and the 80s and the most recent regulations, The IRS and the Treasury Department have been consistent. They have never wavered that the ERISA requirement of stating a normal retirement age requires the specification of an age. The defendant attempts to muddy the waters by highlighting that the IRS has waffled on how low that age can be. But there is no debate that the service and the Treasury Department have always taken the position that it must be an age. And the preamble, in fact, to the proposed reg, which became final in 2007, talks about the tension between allowing any age, which the service says would allow subterfuge and allow plans to get around the backloading rules and the minimum distribution rules, and dismiss that as inconsistent with the statute and the statutory purpose. Well, that is exactly, actually it's worse what the plan does here. The plan here makes no attempt to specify an age. They simply focus on 5 years of service in an effort to get around backloading rules and the minimum distribution rules, this court's decision in Berger and IRS Notice 96-8. I ask the court to consider the absurdity of a 5 years of service as a normal retirement age. I referenced earlier an 18-year-old who leaves high school and begins to work for Exelon is told that he's expected to retire at 23. Mr. Fry, my client, had about 15 years to go to reach his normal retirement age under the existing Exelon plan, which ironically stated normal retirement age is 65, which is what most pension plans do. And then in one day, he's told that he has actually passed his normal retirement age by 28 years in this new plan. Again, the defendant won't come out and say this, but it's obvious that this is simply a gimmick. There's no attempt to comply with the statute. There's no attempt to comply with even the spirit of the statute. And lastly, there is a regulation that applies when a plan does not specify a normal retirement age. It's 1.411A-7B. And what that regulation says is if a plan does not specify an age, and we know this plan does not, then there is a whole set of rules to establish what the normal retirement age would be. And example two in that regulation would apply to this situation, and it would set the default normal retirement age at 65. So I ask the court to reverse the district court. I ask the court to apply 1.411A-7B and find that the default normal retirement age in this plan is 65. I'll save the rest of my time for rebuttal unless there are questions.
Thank you, Mr. Strong.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Mr. Trump.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. The Exelon plan, as Mr. Sprong noted, defines normal retirement age as the earlier of completion of 5 years of vesting service or the statutory ceiling. That definition is part of a plan structure that allowed the plan to provide benefits it could not otherwise provide. In particular, the right to take lump sum distributions and the benefit of a crediting rate substantially in excess of the statutory discount rate. An equity-based rate subject to a 4% minimum guaranteed rate. The plan was not required to provide either of those benefits. Statute does not require lump sum distributions, and it also does not require an interest crediting rate above the discount rate. Now, had the plan chosen not to provide either of those features, there's no question there would be no whipsaw issue here. But those features made the plan more valuable to participants, and so the plan decided to structure itself in a way to provide those benefits to the plan participants. The fact that the plan set itself up that way is exactly what this court was referring to in the Janowski case, where the court explained that Congress intended plans to balance desired benefits against economic realities when setting normal retirement age. The economic reality here was that if you allowed lump sum distributions and a high crediting rate, you exposed yourself to the whipsaw. And so what the plan did was structure itself in a way to avoid that cost while still being able to provide those benefits to plan participants. The fact that another structure might have incurred whipsaw liability does not mean that the plan cannot, consistent with the statute, structure itself in a way to avoid that liability and enable itself to provide those extra benefits. Now, the statute defines normal retirement age as the earlier of the time a plan participant attains normal retirement age under the plan, or the age 65 ceiling subject to the 5 years of participation. Now, as plaintiff...
In other words, as the earlier of 5 years or 5 years?
I suppose that's right. Right.
Odd drafting.
Odd drafting, but consistent. there are a lot of odd provisions in ERISA, as Your Honor knows. The now, normal retirement age is a term of art under the statute. It is a it describes basically a triggering point under a retirement plan, the point at which a participant is entitled to his full accrued benefit without reduction because of age. The subject to the statutory age 65 ceiling, Congress provided that normal retirement age is to be determined under the plan. Now, because of that statutory definition, there's no reason to turn to dictionaries to define normal or retirement or age. Had Congress intended a dictionary definition of the term, it would have been easy to do that. The IRS, in fact, prior to ERISA, had adopted that kind of interpretation for normal retirement age.
Surely you're not suggesting that ordinary understandings of the word age are irrelevant. Suppose the plan defined normal retirement age to be $25,000.
Then I would say the plan had not defined a normal retirement age, Your Honor.
Yeah, because $25,000 is not a plausible understanding of the word age.
Nor is it a plausible understanding of the word time, which is, of course, the word the statute uses. It says that normal retirement age is the time a plan, the time at which a participant attains normal retirement age under the plan. So I think that the answer to your hypothetical,
right.
Your Honor,
so I think we're agreed, therefore, that the first line in the statutory definition, which says the normal retirement age is whatever is found in the plan, can't possibly mean whatever is found in the plan, because then the plan could include $25,000 or three sheep or something else that wouldn't seem responsive to the issue.
Right, because they're not a time. Correct. 5 years of service, however, is a time, and so I think it's consistent with the statutory language. The now, the courts that have considered the question, with the exception of the district court in Laurent, have agreed that a plan can use a term of service to define normal retirement age, and that would be the D.C. District Court in Nichols and the Third Circuit in the Ryan case. Their rulings are consistent with the statutory language. The district court in Laurent actually went off in a different direction because of what it perceived to be the requirements of a Second Circuit decision in the Duschau case, which involved the separate question of vesting requirements under Section 203A and not the the definition of normal retirement age. Judge Hart, in his opinion, explained that Laurent rested on that misreading of Duschau and also on a misreading of the revenue ruling 78-120, that in which the IRS originally said normal retirement age under a plan does not have to correspond to a typical retirement age in the industry or company. Now, the IRS rulings in this area have, up until 2007, made very clear that a normal retirement age did not have to reflect normal, typical or normal retirement experience in the dictionary sense. In fact, the IRS in 78-120 had noted that that had previously been its position prior to ERISA, but that in light of ERISA and its statutory definition, that regulatory definition would no longer apply. And it made very clear in Revenue Ruling 78-331, which dealt with funding and deduction and accrual issues for retirement plans, that there was no necessary connection under ERISA between a plan's definition of normal retirement age and the age at which employees might typically be expected to retire. Now, in 2007, the IRS changed its position by adopting new legislative rules that basically reinstated the typical retirement age standard. But that action doesn't apply here because those rules were prospective in effect. But it's nonetheless instructive because what the IRS did was review its prior positions where it had said normal retirement age under a plan does not have to reflect typical retirement age, and then said, and we are modifying our position going forward by adopting new rules, prospective rules, that now restrict the way a plan can define normal retirement age. So to the extent that there was any doubt about the IRS's position prior to 2007, the 2007 rulemaking made that very clear. Now, it is true, as Mr. Sprung pointed out, that the IRS revenue rulings prior to 2007 had spoken in terms of age and not years of service. And to be candid, the IRS has not squarely addressed the years of service question as part of the definition of normal retirement age. But revenue ruling 78-120 rested, in the IRS's view, on what it called the absence of any statutory prohibition or limitation on a plan's definition of normal retirement age. And in addition, there, in the context of the IRS rules dealing with non-discrimination requirements, Regulation 1.401A412 provides that a plan that defines normal retirement age as the later of a stated age or 5 years of service satisfies the non-discriminatory uniform normal retirement age requirement that applies under those rules. It's hard to see how a plan definition could satisfy the uniform normal retirement age definition if it didn't have a proper normal retirement age to begin with. So we submit that that regulation, the IRS's pre-2007 position, and the statute's use of the word time all indicate that a definition based on a length of service is a proper definition under the statute. Now, Mr. Sprung referred a couple of times to some sort of an attempt to circumvent the backloading rules, and I think he referred to a couple of other provisions. There are other provisions in ERISA that use the term normal retirement age. But the definition of normal retirement age in the plan here does nothing to undercut the application of those provisions. First of all of those provisions were in effect throughout the period when the IRS said that normal retirement age can be any age less than 65 and does not have to reflect when people are expected to retire or typically retire. The backloading rules essentially require an even accrual of benefits over time and don't permit, for example, accelerated accruals as a participant has more years of service. The statute and the rules governing backloading specify various formulas to ensure that a plan satisfies those rules. Those formulas use normal retirement age as one of the factors in how they work. And so in theory, a plan with a low normal retirement age might be able to circumvent the backloading rules if it chose to do so. That theoretical concern, however, would exist with any definition of normal retirement age that's earlier than 65 or the time a participant might be expected to retire, and the IRS in its various revenue rulings have clearly approved ages of that kind. Moreover, there is no question here, although Mr. Sprung alluded to a concern about backloading in the Exelon plan, there's no backloading claim in this case, and in fact, the Exelon plan provides for even accruals of 5.75% of annual compensation year after year after year. It does not change based on years of service. So there is no backloading concern here. The other thing that Mr. Sprung referenced was the rules dealing with suspension of benefits and accruals when somebody when benefits are suspended when somebody continues working after normal retirement age. Again, those rules involve calculations and determinations based on normal retirement age, but they are not affected by the age that's selected or by defining normal retirement age in terms of years of service. The most that would happen is that those rules would be triggered more frequently by a low normal retirement age, but it does not affect the operation of those rules. Finally, Mr. Sprung referred to the default rule, 1.411A7B. In fact, as Judge Hart noted, if you apply the default rule in this case, you come up with a normal retirement age under this plan of 5 years, because that is the point at which benefits no longer increase solely due to changes in age or service. Benefits after 5 years, 5 years is the vesting point, benefits after 5 years increase because of compensation, which of course is tied to service, but it's not, they don't increase solely on account of service. And, of course, the interest, the investment credit, continues as a participant ages, but that's because of the passage of time. And as this court held in Cooper, the fact that a variable is correlated with age doesn't mean that age is the factor. Here it is the passage of time. If the court has any questions, I'm happy to address them. Thank you. We ask that the judgment entered by Judge Hart be affirmed. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Trela. Anything further, Mr. Sprung?
Yes, Your Honor.
Sometimes when I listen to the argument and read the briefs in this case, I feel like I've gone down the rabbit hole. Mr. Trela said that the service credits remained level at 5.75 throughout a participant's service, and yet at the same time says that the service credits aren't provided on account of service, they're provided on account of compensation, as though someone gets compensated without providing service. The service comes first, and that's what the regulation is talking about. And with respect to age, the passage of time is age for interest crediting purposes. So unless you're alive and living another year, you won't be getting an interest credit. So that they in no way meet the definitions in the regulation. I'd like to also address the contention that the non-discrimination rules somehow save them. What the non-discrimination rules say is very similar to what the statute says, that it has to be later of an age or a term of service, not the earlier. Their plan says the earlier of a term of service, as you put it, Judge Easterbrook, 5 years or 5 years. And he spent most of his time talking about, as I thought he might, whether or not normal retirement age has to be a normal retirement age. That's not the issue in this case. The issue in this case is whether 5 years of service is normal retirement age, and it's not. He also contended that they did this because they wanted to provide a big interest credit. They wanted, in other words, to provide a bigger level of benefits. Well, that could have been done, and you could have avoided the whipsaw by increasing the service credits, which would have been a very simple way to do it. However, and the case was dismissed before I got a chance to do discovery, but I know from other cases I've worked on that the reason for that is that the interest credits can be defrayed over time for financial accounting reasons, whereas a service credit, the cost of that has to be recognized immediately. Also, this more valuable benefit argument was squarely rejected by this court in Berger versus Xerox, where Xerox argued that it shouldn't have to perform the whipsaw because it was providing interest crediting rates that were above market or at least more valuable than the federally mandated discount rate. And the Berger court soundly rejected the idea that because the employer had chosen to be more generous than it had to be, that it didn't have to comply with the law. Lastly,
I don't want to prolong anything here, but he switched plans, as I understand it, and then retired a couple of years later. Had he stayed in the original plan, what would his outcome have been?
In terms of what, Your Honor?
His monthly pension checks or his lump sum distribution.
I have not done that calculation, but the largest, by far, portion of his benefit was the benefit that was attributable to the service in the old plan. I don't know if he made a wise economic choice to make the jump.
Well, he got $500,000 as a lump sum.
I believe he got $575,000. If my memory is correct, about $500,000 of that was attributable to the accrued benefit under the old formula, and about $75,000 attributable to the cash balance formula.
My question was, would he have been better off staying in the old plan rather than making the switch?
Like I said, I have not done the calculation to determine whether or not his annuity benefit would have been higher. Certainly, the plan could have allowed him to take a lump sum or rollover from the old plan, so that's sort of a straw horse as well, or straw man, I should say, in the sense that they didn't have to go to the cash balance plan to allow for lump sums. Lots of traditional defined benefit plans allow for lump sums. I'm sorry, I don't know the answer as to whether he would have been financially better off to stay in the other one. Generally speaking, the answer would probably be yes, because Mr. Fry was getting close to what the prior plan and most every other plan calls normal retirement age, which is 65. And in a traditional defined benefit plan, as you approach age 65, your benefit increases dramatically because the formula is typically a percentage times years of service times final average earnings. and I believe most final average earnings plans, I think this one did, take the last or highest 3 years of earnings. And since typically your wages go up, as you get closer to 65, your earnings go up. And, of course, the multiplier of years of service goes up as well. If there are no further questions, I again ask that the district court be reversed, case be remanded.
Thank you very much, counsel. The case is taken under advisement.